Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Ben Dubose, NBA writer for Sheridan Hoops based in Houston. I'm joined today by Josh Reese of CBS Radio affiliate Sports Radio 610, also here in Houston. We've both been covering the Western Conference Finals for the past couple of weeks, and we also jointly host the Red and Orange Report podcast. Josh, welcome back. First and foremost, let's get to the news right off the wire, which is that Dwight Howard will not be suspended for Game 5 for the elbow he threw in the direction of Andrew Bogut. He will play. Josh, are you surprised at all?
Hey, what's up, Ben? First of all, no, I am not surprised. Last night I went to the Warriors locker room, and of course Andrew Bogut, what else was he going to say? You know, but he kind of agreed that he did not see the NBA kind of letting Dwight Howard miss this next game, and rightly so. I mean, not only that fact, it wasn't malicious intent. And when reading the NBA official, their little recap of it, you know, I think they got it completely right. Dwight Howard was just trying to break free from Andrew Bogut, and you know, there wasn't anything, you know, really behind that. He wasn't trying to cause any injury. You know, the NBA got this one right.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they deserve credit because, you know, officials are an easy target for blame. We all do it. The only logic to potentially suspending Dwight was based on the fact that they ejected Al Horford from the Hawks-Cavaliers game the other day. But here's the thing. I don't agree with that, and two wrongs don't make a right. You know, just because you got the Horford thing wrong, and by the way, the Horford thing was not a decision by the NBA. It was, you know, a referee thing in real time. It wasn't like the league office went and made that decision. But the bottom line is that just because they make a mistake one time, they don't need to keep digging the hole deeper, you know. And in this case, I thought their statement was spot on. They acknowledged that Howard was trying to extricate himself, which basically means Bogut was baiting him. And I thought the call was appropriate because, as we talked about during the game, the entire sequence could have been avoided if the officials had called a fairly obvious loose ball foul. You know, it was a missed shot, and Howard was in position for the rebound. Bogut put both arms around him to prevent him from going after the ball. And, you know, it happens. I understand officials aren't going to make every call right. They're going to miss some. But their missed call in this case played a role in, you know, Dwight trying to extricate himself. And while it was, you know, a reckless flailing of the arm, it was not excessive. It's not something that should suspend one of the marquee players in this series from an elimination game in the playoffs.
I agree. It just wasn't that one foul that they missed. They missed three fouls in that sequence. And I am, of course, one of the biggest Rockets fans out there. Dwight Howard had the first foul on Andrew Bogut when he was trying to position himself in. But they let that one go on, so Andrew Bogut fouls him next, trying to, to unposition Dwight Howard. So then Josh Smith loses the ball, and Dwight's trying to go for the ball. That's a foul there. That's three fouls on one play that could have avoided that whole flagrant in the beginning.
Yeah, you know, the officials bear some responsibility for it, and I think that's why Joey Crawford's crew called it a flagrant one on the floor. And as far as the review process, I like the precedent here of deferring to the judgment on the floor unless there was a clear overriding factor. One of the things that I really criticized the NBA for this year was their suspension of James Harden after the LeBron James kick in that Sunday game in March when Cleveland came to Houston. And the reason that I criticized it so much was that the officials on the floor stopped the game, looked at it for 5 minutes, and they told the Cavaliers, you know, they called it a flagrant one, not a flagrant two. They told the Cavaliers that they did not judge there to be any intent from Harden. In other words, it was a reckless kick, but he was not intentionally trying to, you know, kick LeBron James in the gonads. And then the league office overruled it the next day, and my take on that, are you saying that your referees are incompetent? Because I don't think they are. You know, if these referees are true professionals, and most of them are, and they take 5 minutes to review a play, that's why you have these review processes, and they come to a judgment, then I think you should generally stick with those judgments unless there is a, you know, clear and compelling reason. And in this case, there just wasn't.
I agree, and, you know, I totally agree the NBA upheld this one rightly. I asked Jason Terry in the Rockets locker room after game, you know, do you kind of think that the NBA might upgrade this? And he kind of rolled off the shoulder. NBA doesn't upgrade many things, but no, they upgraded James Harden before, so it was quite possible they could have done it this time. But, you know, even though Dwight Howard missed out on being suspended, for this next upcoming game, if this Rockets series goes on longer with the Warriors, he's got to be careful because he has 6 technical fouls right now, and another flagrant foul is also going to.
He's at a point now. It's not just the technical; it's the flagrant too. Another of anything, and he has just got to know better than to respond in that manner. And now, you know, he's at the very end of his rope. And it's not all fair. Certainly, we've seen a lot of baiting by, you know, the big men of the Clippers. We saw Glenn Davis and DeAndre Jordan do it. Now we've seen Andrew Bogut do it. But at the same time, he's got to be used to it, and he's got to not respond in that way. And I think the one positive after going through this experience, no doubt the Rockets were a little bit worried. No doubt Dwight, if he got any sleep last night, because of course Dwight was with the Houston flooding, he was stuck at Toyota Center for most of the night, along with you and a handful of other Houston media. But I think bringing attention to this, if Dwight doesn't get it now, he's never going to. You know, in the past, you know, you kind of let it roll off your back. Well, now the spotlight is clearly on him. He dodged a bullet, but at the same time, everybody, the officials are going to be looking for it, the fans are going to be looking for it, and it's going to be in the forefront of Dwight's mind. So there's no excuses anymore. He just cannot respond in that nature.
No, and it's Dwight needs to, I don't want to say grow up, because, you know, Dwight's fine, but he just needs to understand the situation in the end and the value he has to his team. And I think that's one of the things that Jason Terry and also Pat Beverly was trying to kind of tell Dwight when Dwight went over the bench after the flagrant, was just like, you know, kind of just understand where you are and understand how valuable you are to this team. If you're gone, the Rockets have nearly no chance on winning without Dwight. And he needs to be out there for him to win. He needs to understand how important he is to the team.
Yeah, and I think we've seen progressively throughout the series when he's out of the game, they are really targeting Clint Capella, the backup center in Houston, on lobs and plays going to the basket. You know, every time Dwight went out of the game in Game 4, it became a lob fest. It was like you were almost watching the Clippers in their heyday, you know, and that's just because Dwight's the only proven rim protector the Rockets have. Capella has some shot-blocking skills, but obviously he's very young, very raw. He's not as advanced there. He is the one hope that Houston has of being competitive defensively against the Warriors, so it's imperative that he learns from this. And like I said, the positive for Houston is that, as I said, there's a lot of exposure from this. I think it's going to be in the forefront of Dwight's mind. The other thing, though, it's going to be in the forefront of the Warriors' minds, too. You know they're going to be trying to prod and instigate and do all this other stuff for Game 5, so it's just going to be up to Dwight to respond in the right way. The other main story from Game 4, besides the Rockets winning and, you know, the series extending, which we'll get to in a minute, was the scary situation with Steph Curry's fall. And I watched it from the press box. I know you actually missed part of the game because when the whole situation happened, and by the way, it was very scary. At one point, they actually brought out a backboard to take Curry off the floor. Now, thankfully, they didn't end up having to use that, but that shows just how, you know, scary the situation was at the time. And after that, I know you went down into the, you know, the halls, the inner workings of Toyota Center to see what was going on back there, along with a handful of other media. And, you know, why don't you talk about some of the things that you saw in that 45-minute stretch that Curry was being checked out and trying to return?
Well, of course, they would not allow media anywhere near the Warriors' locker room for the beginning. They ended up coming out and saying he was questionable to return. I was kind of a little bit worrisome because you saw Del Curry, Steph Curry's father, go back there, and I figured, I was like, oof, if the pop's back there, it's got to be something pretty bad. After the halftime, they ended up bringing out a they brought out the bike that they that you know the guys can use to get warm out there, and it was definitely a scary situation because you know no one would come out, no one would kind of tell you what was going on. You kind of just were left there wondering. And halftime came out, Curry was still back there, and he ended up coming out midway through. I think it was about midway through the third. He ended up coming out, and then he went back in, and it was definitely an interesting time, to say the least.
Yeah, it was a very weird game because that took away so much of the flow. You know, the Rockets started off red hot in that game, and then once that happened, it was just a stunned silence over the arena. It actually helped the Warriors, I thought, get back in the game a little bit because it took everybody's edge off. But as Curry returned, and, you know, initially people were a little worried about him because he had an air ball, which is very uncharacteristic, had a couple of shots blocked. But ultimately, he did get back into the game. Some of it may have been just his rhythm thrown off from a very unnatural series of events with that. And in the fourth quarter, he did look like himself. He hit multiple threes, and he was a big factor in the Warriors trying to come back and get that game. And down the stretch of the fourth quarter, I thought the game went back to, you know, what we've seen for three of the four games of this series, which is James Harden and Stephen Curry putting on an absolute show in the fourth quarter of close games. Game three was a little bit of an outlier in terms of the Rockets just did not show up ready to play. The Warriors put on a show. But in the fourth quarter of game one, game two, and game four, you've basically seen the two best young talents in the NBA going one-on-one. And I don't know about you, it's been one of the highlights of my NBA reporting career just to kind of be able to be in the arena and watch this unfold.
No, I agree. It's definitely been a pleasure and a treat to watch. And just to see these two, you know, it's the weird thing. Going into the series, you know, you kept on hearing James Harden versus Steph Curry, but those guys don't match up against each other. So you don't get to see that battle one-on-one. But you do get to see the offensive splendor that these two guys bring. And it's just amazing to watch. I still can't understand how skinny, tiny Steph Curry can do the things that he does. I mean, he can get off those three shots, unbalanced three shots, and he can go to the rim fearlessly. That's insane.
Yeah.
And then you have James Harden, who is all bearded. He looks like he's a little bit slow, but, I mean, Jesus, those step-back jumpers that he has, he goes to the rim like nobody's business. He is the master of drawing the foul. It's insane.
Yeah. I will say, I think the system that Golden State has makes continuity huge for them. You know, throughout the year, we've talked about how did Golden State, with a very comparable roster, you know, go from a 51-win sixth seed to a 67-win, you know, the best team in the NBA, just a juggernaut, with very similar players. And of course, you know, Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are, you know, have taken steps forward, and, you know, Steve Kerr appears to be an upgraded coach over Mark Jackson. But, you know, to go from a 51 to 67 wins is remarkable. But when you watch Curry in person, it's not just one-on-one play. It's the intricate number of screens, the way he, you know, it's like a maze, the way he just goes through and slices your defense, and the way his teammates know exactly where to be, exactly, you know, exactly how to roll, exactly when to step out, and stuff like that comes with time. You know, you can have all the right players in the world, but you're not going to have the timing down without playing together for several years. And I think that's kind of an undertold story of what's made the Warriors so dominant. And, you know, props to them in a league that's kind of always about finding the next star and trying to rebuild, you know, your roster, and teams constantly churning through. I think the Warriors are a good study in continuity and the value of, you know, chemistry. Because over the past 2 to 3 years, as they've brought in, you know, as they surrounded Curry and Klay Thompson with the Bogutts, the Harrison Barnes, the Draymond Greens, they've let that chemistry go. And now what you have, it's not just Curry doing things one-on-one, but he fits so well in the team concept as well. The other thing I forgot to mention earlier about Curry, and we can apply it to Harden as well, it's kind of interesting that the injury, and thank goodness it wasn't serious, the injury happened when Curry was trying to make a defensive play. You know, both Curry and Harden took a lot of grief early in their careers about not being as committed on the defensive end of the floor. But both of them have made huge strides in that area. And, you know, if Curry had just let that fast break happen, the whole scare never takes place. He never goes flying over Trevor Ariza. He never goes tumbling over. The whole reason that situation happened was because Curry on defense was very selfless. He went after the ball. He tried to make a play. And unfortunately, basketball's a, you know, it's a physical game. And sometimes that stuff is going to happen, especially if you're airborne. But I think it speaks to the value of just how much Curry wants to win.
I agree. And just a little mini rant here. If I ever hear people say that what Trevor Ariza did was a dirty play, I will lose my mind. How on earth can you call that a dirty play?
He pump faked.
It's not his fault that Steph Curry jumped over top of him. How is he supposed to know?
No, it was just a run-of-the-mill pump fake. That's exactly what you're supposed to do in that situation. You see a weak side defender come in to block your shot, you pump your fake so they go by, and either, you know, you get the foul or, you know, you get a layup if they go flying by you. It just so happens that's one of those risky things in basketball. There's no sport that's just there's no sport that's without risk, and it's just a part of the game. Blaming Ariza for what happened to Curry is just silly. The flip side, though, as great as Curry has been in this series, and he's, you know, shooting almost 55% from three, which is just ridiculous. Story game four, James Harden. He's been, you know, as great as Curry's been, and we just talked about his exploits, and he's a deserving MVP winner. You could argue that in three of the four games, game one, game two, and game four, Harden was even better. I'm going to read you Harden's stat line for the series, and remember that this includes game three. This includes a game in which Harden was 3 of 16 for 17 points, you know, and obviously struggling. Harden's numbers for the series, he's scoring 32 points a game on 50.6% shooting and 48% shooting from three. He's also averaging over 7 assists and about 8 rebounds. Those are ridiculous numbers. As great as Harden was during the regular season, he's even better right now against the Warriors, who might be the best defense in the entire NBA. And, you know, who's been better between Harden and Curry in the series? I think you have to give a slight nod to Curry only because Harden had the one off game, whereas Curry, with the exception of missing some of the game due to injury yesterday, Curry hasn't really had an off game. But for three of the four games, Harden has been every bit as good and perhaps even better.
I agree. When we took a look at this series, in the beginning of the series, I said that if the Rockets were going to win, you needed James Harden to score 30 points a game. And the Rockets had been in the first two games. They had a very, very good chance on being up in this series 3-1 right now. Because, of course, that game three was just, you know, whitewash, whatever. But those first two games in Golden State, those were within the Rockets' grasp. The Warriors let them back in the game, both those games, but the Rockets weren't able to make final plays. And in game four, it was just a whitewash the other way. But James Harden has given you everything you expected and wanted if you're going to win this series.
Yeah.
And as we have said many times before, no team has ever come back from down three games to none. But some team has to eventually, right? The odds can't stay like this forever.
Yeah. You know, the odds are definitely still in favor of the Warriors. But what I wrote a column today on Sheridan Hoops after, you know, Harden's exploits last night, 45 points, the first Rocket to score 45 points in a playoff game since Hakeem back in 95. And my takeaway, regardless of whether the Rockets win this series or not, and they probably still aren't, you have to feel good if you are a Rockets fan that James Harden can be the alpha dog on a championship team. And, you know, as much as we talked about him being a worthy MVP guy during the year, you didn't know that going in. His last 2 years in the postseason were not great. He shot below 40% from the field. The Oklahoma City series, you know, he was kind of a one-man wrecking crew. So, you know, him being a little off in that series was understandable back in 2013. In 2014 against Portland, that was a little concerning. You know, and of course back then he had the defensive issues too. And as great as he was in the regular season, there was a small part of you that wondered, can he be the lead guy, not just a guy, but the lead guy on a championship team? And to me, this series has proven beyond any shadow of a doubt, the answer is yes. It's just a matter of, do you have the right pieces around him? And the story of this series so far is that the Warriors just have a few more pieces, a little bit more depth from top to bottom. You know, Curry and Harden have largely canceled each other out, but where the Warriors have really made the difference is, you know, these guys they bring off the bench, the Sean Livingstons of the world, and, you know, he may have been the difference in the first two games of this series, swinging them in Golden State's direction. The one thing I'll point out that could be a potential positive from Golden State last night, and maybe a blessing in disguise from all the scariness with Curry's injury, was Klay Thompson. I thought last night was the first time that Klay Thompson really showed something in this series. And, you know, it's not a huge indictment on him. He's been guarded for the most part by Trevor Ariza, and Trevor Ariza, we watch him all the time. He is one of the best defenders in the NBA. But Klay Thompson, first three games of this series, he was shooting 18% from three and 36% from the field. To put it in perspective, going into this series, he was 48% from the field and 48% from three. Ridiculously efficient. And he had been, you know, I won't say a non-factor, but Trevor Ariza made him essentially a volume shooter. He wasn't getting his shots in rhythm. He was, shooting out of the flow of the offense. In game four, once Curry went out, someone had to step up. And I think you saw Klay get going a little bit. You know, he went 6 of 13 from 3, which is by far his best performance of the series, 24 points overall. And I thought for the first time in this series, Klay Thompson really showed you something last night. And if you're the Warriors, I think that's something that you build on for Game 5.
I agree. It was nice to see Thompson kind of finally step up. And when Curry went down, I mean, that was the only option that the Warriors had at staying in that game. And the Warriors did stay in that game.
Yeah, they did. They cut it to 6 at one point.
And they ended up coming back. But to me, I still think that Thompson is a volume shooter. I mean, he's not going to be as efficient as Curry or James Harden. I mean,
sure.
He had 21 shots last night. He scored 24 points. And, of course, that was the most he scored in the series. But it took him 21 shots to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll go a step further, and you know, I know we're going to get to Game 5 predictions in a minute as we kind of wrap this up, but we look at X factors for Game 5. I think we're both in agreement. We talked last night. I think we both expect a close game. I don't think the Rockets are going to be overwhelmed by the Oakland environment simply because they played extremely competitively in Game 1 and Game 2. And, you know, they're 4-0 against elimination this postseason. They're 7-2 under Harden. I don't think the Rockets are going to be, you know, just at a loss for the environment. I think this game is going to come down to X factors. I think you expect both Curry and Harden to be the MVP players they are. But you talk about volume shooters. The Warriors have one in Klay Thompson. The Rockets have one in Josh Smith. And of course, Josh scored 17 points, went 7 of 8 from the field last night. And to me, the real question for the Rockets, you know what you're going to get from Harden. You know he's going to try and attack. You're not seeing facilitating James anymore. He's trying to score. He knows that to break down a great defense like Golden State, he's got to be the guy. But for him to have room to operate, someone else on the Rockets has to be able to make the Golden State defense pay. Not just with shooting, but being able to, you know, make a few plays off the dribble when they are overcommitting to Harden. And to me, that guy is Josh Smith. If you point to the Rockets, other than James Harden, who needs to play well for them tomorrow night to get a win?
I agree. It's also got to be Josh Smith. I thought one of the funnier things from last night's post-game press conference was Dwight Howard when he was talking about Josh Smith and talking about his early start and everything. He was like, yeah, Josh Smith would come down and he'd take those threes, and it was those, oh, no, oh, yes, threes. And that's totally right. And I know I was sitting next to you during the game, and I was just like, that's bad offense.
Yeah.
That's horrible offense. But for some reason, when Josh Smith's back is against the wall, it seems to work out for him.
Yep,
the last two games in the Clippers series, he had 19 points, 15 points. He scored 20 in this game with the Warriors.
He was essentially the second coming of Robert Horry in the fourth quarter of Game 6.
Big Shot Bob was there last night. Maybe I should have asked him if he's the torch.
Yeah, and so to me, you know, that's the interesting subplot of this. You know, you have Harden and Curry doing their thing. And Dwight Howard, you know, I think the one thing about Dwight, he's been remarkably consistent in this series. He hasn't gotten in major foul trouble. I think you know what you're going to get out of him. I think the X factors are Klay Thompson and Josh Smith. what are you going to get from those two guys? They're both volume shooters to an extent. Which of them is going to step up and give the more help? Because to me, that's where that's where the game may be won or lost. And I think you go back to game two, you know, that was when Josh Smith shot dreadfully, and I think that may have been why the Rockets, couldn't quite get over the hump. And if you go to tomorrow night, I think Josh may be the guy that, I just keep going back to the term X factor, because the other guys, Dwight, you know what you're going to get. Trevor Ariza, you know what you're getting there. The same for the point guards. Josh Smith, and maybe to a lesser extent, Terrence Jones, those are the two guys that have a lot of variability. And if you're the Rockets, you need at least one of those guys to step up and have a big boy game.
I agree. It would also be nice to see Jason Terry knock down threes at more of an efficient shooting percentage. During this Warriors series, he hasn't been that efficient from three.
Yeah, I think so too. That's a little worrisome. You have, Jason Terry is a liability on defense. We all know that at age 37. His thing, he has got to make wide open set threes. If he can't do that, he is a liability on the floor, and the Rockets are better off just playing without a point guard and playing big, or maybe Prigioni. Prigioni's had an up and down series. But, for Terry to have value, he's got to hit those open shots. And the thing I wonder is that unique offense the Warriors run, they do so much ball movement. I mean, they use so much player movement without the ball. The only team like the Warriors that I can think of is the Spurs in terms of the way they challenge you away from the ball. And I'm wondering if just having to chase the guys like Steph Curry, like Klay Thompson around the perimeter might be taking a little bit of a toll on Jason Terry's 37-year-old legs.
I agree, kind of like the reverse Klay Thompson a little bit, because Klay Thompson, you could say, has been so marginalized offensively because he's been chasing around James Harden defensively, and that same type of effect for Jason Terry could be happening.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll wrap this up. Quick predictions. Game five, do the Warriors close it out, or do the Rockets somehow force this thing back to Houston for a game six?
I am going to say it comes back to Houston for game six.
I'm not
saying this with my rocket-colored glasses. I'm saying this because, for some reason, when the Rockets' backs are against the wall, they do well. And the first two games they did in Golden State, they held in there, and the Golden Warriors gave them a chance to win the game. I think the Rockets are going to ride this momentum back to Houston.
Yeah, I'm going to go against you, but I'll hedge my bet and say it would not surprise me at all. I think anyone expecting, there's a few in the national media, expecting a Warriors romp is misguided. The Rockets are a very mature team. They have the second best road record in the NBA all year. They are not fazed by the environment. You just go back to games one and two. The only thing that scares me a little bit is I thought last night there were stretches that you saw Klay Thompson get a little bit hot, and I worry about them having a second guy step up in the fourth quarter of a tight game. But regardless, even if the series ends tomorrow night, I think we've all been very entertained by this, and I think the odds are pretty good that we'll have an entertaining Game 5, too.
If you're all for conspiracy theories, Ben, I think the NBA would want this to go seven games.
That is true.
Versus MVP runner-up.
I think this series will definitely be better than the finals. I'm just going to put that out there. I know LeBron is LeBron, but no Kevin Love, a gimpy Kyrie Irving. I think the Warriors can beat Cleveland. It might be five games, but I don't think it'll be as competitive a five games as these against Houston have been. And that's if it ends in five. Maybe it won't. But, I guess what I'm saying, I think Houston will give Golden State a bigger run than Cleveland will. I just don't think Cleveland has the depth to hang with a Western power. I think the NBA would definitely like this series to go seven, because I think everybody in the world knows that Cleveland and Atlanta isn't Atlanta with Korver out for the year now. Carroll obviously playing Gempe. It's tough to imagine them really making a push. On the other hand, you've seen enough upside from the Rockets. They're one game away. And I'll put this out there. Yes, I'm picking the Warriors to win tomorrow night, all that. If the Rockets somehow win game five, I think there is legitimate concern for the Warriors. Because here's the thing. If the Rockets are able to win tomorrow night, the cloak of invincibility will go away, in terms of the game seven at home. Because in this series, games one and two in Oakland were extremely close. And in a hypothetical world where the Rockets win game five, do you think there would be any fear at all on the Rockets' part of going back there for a game seven?
I completely agree.
I don't think there is.
Pressure is 100% on the Warriors. Yeah. They have to close out tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, if it goes on beyond tomorrow, I think there's a little bit of an eerie feeling going on. They'd still be the favorites. They did close out Memphis in Game 6 on the road, so you can't count them out. But I do think that they're going to have a sense of urgency. They need to close this out tomorrow or else you get into very dicey territory. Anyway, Josh, thank you so much for joining me. Why don't you toss out your Twitter handle, anything else you're working on?
You can follow me at Mr. Joshua, and I'm hoping for Game 6, and I'll see you there.
Yep. Thanks again for joining me. This has been DuBose with Sheridan Hoops, and we will talk to you all next time.